I hope you're feeling well. I said I hope that the accident has not caused either personal injury or bodily damage. But before you begin, Mr. Sheehan, I just have a couple of announcements, please. We welcome today the Lincoln High School students from Wisconsin Rapids. Would they stand, please? Well, we're delighted to see you all and hope you had an uneventful trip. Please be seated. This class is here with the Courtless Class program, which has won two national awards. The program is run by the Supreme Court and the State Bar. And you were scheduled, I think, to hear a different case. But we had to change the order of cases today. You were going to hear a case for which you have not been prepared. There are synopses of this case out in the foyer, and you have them, the marshal tells me, so that's good. Now that I've introduced you to the court, I would like to introduce the court to you all. And I'll start with my far left, your right, Justice David Prosser. And to his right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. To my immediate left is Justice William Babbage. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate right is Justice Donald Steinmetz. And to his right, Justice John Wilcox. And to the far right, Justice Patrick Crooks. You all will join the Watertown High School students at about noon, the afternoon, and I will come out and we will discuss the processes and procedures of the court, and any people who want to join us in the courtroom are perfectly welcome. Now, Mr. Sheehan will hear from you. Thank you.
Chief Justice, Justices. First of all, guys, I'm sorry I messed up your schedule, but you're not going to want to hear this one compared to what you would have heard. Because this, to be perfectly honest with you, is very embarrassing for me, but I got to go. I've got to do it. I'm here today not to defend myself from things that I did wrong, which I know I did wrong, and I'm going to pay the price for it. I know that I'm going to be sanctioned for certain things I did, which I'll get into, and I don't begrudge you one bit for doing that to me. I'm here, though, to say that there are certain things that I've been accused of I didn't do. Now, they may not be enough to keep my license. I'm sure they probably won't be. But I want to make it perfectly clear that I know what I did wrong. I'm eternally sorrowful that I did it. It was bad, bad judgment calls. But certain things that I've been accused of I didn't do. And that's the reason I'm here today. In the 1980s, I went down to Florida, became a developer, was very successful. Sold my company in 1991 called Ford Concepts. People I sold it to, I was the last part of a pyramid, $980 million bankruptcy. I spent 2 years as a debtor in possession trying to get my money, which I never got. Came back to Wisconsin in 1993, did all the things I had to do to get my license back, and was relicensed in 1993. I was dead broke, but I had a couple judgments against me in Florida. I had owed millions of dollars. I brought it down to $170,000, I think it was, by being debtor in possession because I would not go through bankruptcy with my kids in high school. So I had some debts that I knew I owed, and I knew that these people would come after me if I had assets. So I made a decision, and it was a horrible decision. I can't justify it in any way except that my mind frame in 93 or early 94 when I was getting started again was, you know, I thought I had to do it. It was a mistake. What I did was I kept anything that, all of my funds, in trust accounts so that nobody else could attach my money. I knew it was wrong, but I did it. And I'm going to pay the price for it. I know it's wrong, and I'm here to say I have no excuse. In 1994, as I was just getting started, I met a man named Jake McMahon, employed, did some work for him, Mr. McMahon had a bar called Bare Chest, which basically was women dancing. That's no other way to put it. He decided he wanted to sell it. So I was doing other work for him, and he asked me to come and try and help him get the place sold. I said, Mr. McMahon, you cannot sell this. You have a conditional use permit. You can't sell it because whoever buys it will not be able to use it for the reasons that you're using it. And he just told me to research, see what you can find. We never found anything. I apparently one myself never found anything. Had some other friends who wanted to buy Mr. McMahon's place. Now, again, I was representing two different clients. I said to both of them every single time we sat down together, you guys know that I'm representing both of you. And they both said, yeah, we know. It's the only way we're going to do it. Again, probably a big mistake on my part. At a time when I was reestablishing my career, I needed both these clients. And again, I made a judgment there. And I also did something that's probably the worst thing I did. So I witnessed the signature eventually on a document, which was wrong. It's the only time in my 30 years of practicing law I ever did anything like that. I did it to stop the sale from Mr. McMahon to this other party because I knew it couldn't happen, and I didn't want to lose McMahon's business. I can give you a million different reasons why I did it that all sounded good at the time to me, but they're all wrong. McMahon gave me $8,000 at that time. That money was repaid to McMahon prior to any claim being filed against me. I'm trying to think what I would have. I guess what I had to gain by doing it was keeping both clients happy. I had no financial. In fact, I never paid McMahon interest on his $8,000 is the total benefit I received out of the whole thing. Yeah, that's what happened. John Quigley came into my office in 1994. I'd done work for John for a lot of years, tax work. Told him I'd do it for him again. John gave me $15,500. I put it in my trust account. The two things wrong in John's case. He had a dissolution of his corporation, and I had nothing to gain. It ended up in the file. For some reason, my paralegal did not file it. I mean, I don't have any explanation for that, except we found it later in the file. And I didn't pay a $3,000 payment on taxes early on. I mean, the way John found that out is the taxes went to him and showed he owed the $3,000. I wasn't trying to take any money from anybody. I just absolutely forgot to do it. John Quigley came in and he was working for me previous to that. And I had fired him and there was real bad blood. And John came in and demanded his money. I gave it to him. He demanded more money. I gave it to him. John said that I'd screwed up his tax returns, which was not correct. So I finally said, here's the deal, John. You take those to the CPA. I've given you $19,500 out of your $15,500. I know I made mistakes. I'm paying for them. But I'm not paying another penny for you to get a CPA to sit down and tell me that I did something wrong on those tax returns. And the very next day, a complaint comes through the state bar. Mr. Quigley didn't want to do that. Again, I have no financial benefit, but the fact remains that the money's all went into trust accounts where my money was also. In the last case, is the one that really bothers me the most. Big headline in the Janesville paper, lawyer steals from homeless man. Doug Newman was a man who had MS type of symptoms. He had mental problems, physical problems. He was a very sad young man, I don't know what I'm saying. Roger Brighton, who was a big automobile dealer in our community, asked me to help him if I would, because Roger's done me favors. I said, fine. So for 2 years, Mr. Newman was on one of those little push carts that go up and down the street. That's how he got around. And for 2 years, 3-4 times a week, he would come into my office, sit down, have coffee, and drive the secretaries crazy. And every time he'd get in a minor scrape with the police, I would get him out of it. And there were probably 6 or 7 of those. In 1985, he got hit by a car. and his sister had already thrown him out of their house, which was left to both of them. And he gets hit by a car, and all of a sudden his sister files for guardianship. She wants to take over because she thinks there's a settlement to him. Well, he didn't want to do it, and bottom line is that the judge appointed me as the conservator. I settled the case. The sister's attorney was John Sanborn in Chainsville, and I stayed in constant contact with John. And Jennifer Nash was a guardian ad litem, and I stayed in constant contact with her. And I can't remember the exact date, but at some point I thought it was time to settle the case. Talked to Mr. Sanborn, talked to the guardian ad litem. They both agreed. So we got $85,000. I did not have a contract with Mr. Newman. It was suggested early on that maybe I should have one. But again, I talked to both the other parties, Nash and Sanborn, and said, it's no good. If I ask this man to sign over 100% of this, he'd give it to me. He's not capable of signing a contract. I didn't think it would stand up. So rather than do that, and John Sanborn did help me with the case. I think I took $21,000. John got about $8,000 or $9,000. We got 33% of the total settlement. Every other nickel went back into Mr. Newman and documents that I prepared, which I have copies of with me. I received $86,000. Every single penny is accounted for, including the fact that he received interest on any monies that were in my trust account at 7.5% for a year, which came to $1,900 or something. Didn't charge him for it. I'm the fellow, and for 2 years I took care of him. I didn't know he was going to have an accident. I certainly wasn't doing it, because I thought I was going to get a lawsuit out of it. And yet I'm the guy who's stealing money from a homeless man with the papers on it. I want to make it perfectly clear, I never touched a penny of his money. I did. It wasn't commingled accounts, because that's the way my accounts work. But nobody ever asked me for money that they didn't get. I never touched it. I guess you have to say I touched it, but I didn't misuse it to the point of not having it available if they needed it. Somewhere it was in one of those trust accounts. The money was all there. Again, I can't justify that, but that was my thinking. Pretty awkward situation. All these years I've been fighting for everybody else. I'm doing a pretty good job with it. And now I'm basically standing up here saying I'm guilty. It's not exactly the way I planned to do this, but unfortunately it's the truth. Fairly successful again in a new industry, and maybe it's all for the best. I didn't touch one penny of anybody's money, period. And they did these other things, and I'm willing to pay the price for it.
Shan, we appreciate your coming here and discussing these facts with us. We know how difficult this is for you, and I want to ask you, to talk about the recommendation of the referee. The referee has recommended that your license be revoked.
Can object.
Okay. Referee has recommended that you pay the cost of the proceeding, and that's the usual.
Can't object to that.
The referee has also stated that that if you make restitution, and that's what the point of my questions are. The issue of restitution, whether it's been made or not been made, would again come up if you applied for your license again. My understanding from this record, and counsel for the board will discuss this, I'm sure, my understanding from this record is that there is not yet, at least from the people who allege you should make restitution, a liquidated amount. So it would be hard for the court, I believe, but I might be corrected by counsel, to order restitution because there's no fixed amount at this time. So the issue of stating that you must make restitution will be ultimately decided as to how much at a later time if you reapply. Do you understand that?
That's fine.
Is that all right?
That's fine.
So you wish to use this opportunity to just address the court about your case. Is that right?
This is the hardest thing I've ever done. I'm 56 years old, and it's the hardest thing I've ever done. And then I got whacked in the rear end of my car this morning coming out. And I just knew this wasn't going to be a good day. I thought so much about it. I just don't have any excuses. I mean, I made some very poor judgment decisions. But I did practice for 30 years, and 50% of my practice was virtually pro bono stuff where I did a lot for people like the Doug Newmans of the world, and I miss that.
Well, thank you for hearing, Shannon, and in addition to your other issues here before us, the accident's unfortunate too. But we appreciate your comments. Crone?
Yeah, please support. My name is Robert Crone. I appear on behalf of the Board of Professional Responsibility. In light of Mr. Sheen's comments and the court's comments, I'll attempt to streamline my argument as I understand the issues to be or remain to be in this case. We're, on behalf of the board, we're seeking the court's approval in the ordering of a revocation of Mr. Sheehan's license based upon the referee Judith Newton's report of April 14 of 1998. We believe to be a comprehensive report based upon the record created in this case. Unfortunately, the court has heard a certain testimony here, if you will, from Mr. Sheehan that I think is kind of a backhand route of attempting to expand on that record. And if we confine ourselves as required to look at that record, as I understand the issues presented by Mr. Sheehan in his brief and understanding the inherent power of this court to take action in these cases, I see three potential questions that have arisen here. One is the question of due process, or was Mr. Sheehan afforded a fair hearing? Two is the question of what to do about this restitution issue that the Chief Justice brought up this morning. And the third is whether or not, all things considered, the revocation recommendation of the referee is supported by clear and convincing evidence as found in this record. First of all, I want to highlight that Mr. Sheehan voluntarily, on November 26, 1997, 5 days before the hearing in front of referee Newton, voluntarily signed a very comprehensive stipulation to facts and conclusions of law, which formulated the basis for the referee's ultimate decision in this case. I should point out that that stipulation in its context in the first paragraph mentioned that the stipulation was to serve as a basis for a report in the imposition of a disciplinary sanction. So the hearing, which was 5 days later on December 1 of 1997, was reserved for the issue in light of this comprehensive stipulation of facts and conclusions of law. The only issue in front of the referee was what is the appropriate sanction. On the question of whether or not Mr. Sheehan received a fair hearing, and I, although not mentioned in his argument this morning, he did raise it in the brief, so I feel compelled to at least touch upon that. I want to advise the court that the board that believes that the referee complied with all of the essential elements of due process, they were all afforded to the respondent. There were a number of scheduling conferences that are shown in this record. The board has always and consistently taken the position that it was seeking the revocation of Mr. Sheehan's license. And ultimately, the December hearing was set on following a scheduling conference and an order of the court of September 30 of 1997. That matter set the hearing for a revocation hearing. The order did not require or the disclosure of any type of witnesses. And it was clear that the hearing was going to proceed at that point in time on whatever the issues were with whatever witnesses either side intended to call. Then, in the intervening time, the stipulation was reached, as I pointed out, which was reached by the parties, and the only thing left for the hearing was the question of sanction. What do we do? What does the referee recommend to this court regarding this conduct? We then presented and to touch upon that question. We, the board, felt that the a referee should hear what we consider to be aggravating circumstances as the referee was to impose a punishment or a sanction. And Mr. Sheehan had the right, and did exercise it to some extent, as he did here today, to offer to the referee mitigating circumstances as to why his punishment should be something other than revocation. That was the point of the hearing. We chose, rather than to simply argue that point, to actually bring in the aggrieved parties, that is, Mr. McMahon, Mr. Quigley, and the attorney for Mr. Newman. These were not surprise witnesses. These are not witnesses that testified beyond the content of the stipulation we already had. They didn't testify to the facts or conclusions. They provided what we would call, essentially impact statements. What did this conduct mean to them? How were they hurt? How were they inconvenienced? What happened to them? And that was the testimony. There was some debate beforehand, as shown in the record, as to how this hearing was to be held. And the referee declared, of course, that the rules of evidence were to be followed, the rules of civil procedure were followed, and Mr. Sheehan had the right and exercised the right to cross-examine these witnesses on all the issues that they testified to. He also had the right and exercised the right to testify.
Counsel.
Yes.
We're going to just change procedure a bit, if we can, here, with your approval and Mr. Sheehan's.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. We're going to just change procedure here
okay. Today
with your approval and Mr. Sheehan. Mr. Sheehan, as I understand it, you do not object to license revocation. Although your brief talks about afforded a fair hearing, my understanding here is that you're not making that objection. And you don't object to the cost, and you have an issue with restitution, but it's one that really is not going to be resolved today, other than to say if you owe it, you will have to pay it. Mr. Krohn, in light of that, and I don't know if we got that on tape, but okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Sheehan, we'll have to repeat that. You have no objection to the license being revoked.
No objection.
You have no objection to the cost being imposed.
No objection.
You're not arguing that you did not have a fair hearing.
No, that argument I've
withdrawn it. Okay. The only issue that you had, I heard an objection from you, was restitution, and that issue, as I explained it, would not be resolved today, other than to say if you owe money, you will have to pay it before you get.
So I owe any money, I'll pay.
And then there may be civil proceedings in that part, not part of this.
I mean, right.
Now, in light of that, Mr. Krohn, is there any other means for argument on your part? Any items that are not resolved?
I don't think there are any items that are not resolved, but I'd like to clarify just a couple of points for the record. First of all, the board was not seeking restitution and believes that the record did not show liquidated damages, and we don't believe there should be a remand or consideration, and that should await for a later determination.
I understand that, and that was Ms. Newton's recommendation. Okay.
And lastly, understanding that the court has, notwithstanding the stipulations or the information presented here, that the court has the ultimate power to review the sanction in light of the record, I just wanted to point out two other companion cases that were rather close to this, recently decided by this court for purposes of...
Just give us the citation, please.
The Cassidy case, 172 with second 600, and the Smith case, 179 with second at 508. And with that, I have nothing other to add other than the recommendation of the revocation.
Thank you, Mr. Krohn. Mr. Sheehan, do you have anything to add?
No, I don't. Thank you very much for hearing.
Well, thank you very much, and we hope that things go back for you in the future. Okay. With that, this case is recessed, adjourned, and we will come back to the court at 1:45. The students have a half hour, if that's all right with them, to look at the Capitol, but they should be back at noon because they will meet up with the Watertown High School students. Is that all right with whoever is in charge here? Is that okay, sir? All right. I'll be back at noon. Bye. project.
from